on this edition for Saturday, August 31st. Southeastern states prepare as Hurricane Dorian charts a course towards the U.S. Threats to suspend Parliament weeks before the Brexit deadline sparks backlash in the U.K. And in our ongoing series, The Future of Food, what France is doing to curb excess food waste. Next on PBS NewsHour Weekend.
From the Tisch WNET studios at Lincoln Center in New York, Hari Srinivasan.
Good evening and thanks for joining us. Forecasters now say Hurricane Dorian may head north and east in the next few days, skirting along the coast of Florida, where warnings are still in place, and heading toward coastal Georgia and the Carolinas. The hurricane is now a Category 4 and is projected to hit the northwestern Bahamas sometime in the next 24 hours, with winds approaching 150 miles per hour. Florida is still in Dorian's potential path, and it may bring strong winds and life-threatening storm surge to Georgia and South Carolina early next week. But before the hurricane reaches the U.S. mainland, it is forecast to slow down and drop as much as 4 feet of rain over the Bahamas this weekend. The prime minister there urged residents in the storm's path to evacuate.
What I can say is that 73,000 residents would be impacted by this storm. And 21,000 homes would be impacted. We are moving as many as possible. Still, there are many residents who are refusing to move, and we send this final plea asking them to kindly move themselves to safer grounds.
Despite the new forecast, Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis asked residents to continue to prepare for a serious storm with an unpredictable path.
If it bumps further east, that obviously is positive. If it bumps just a little west, then you're looking at really, really significant impacts. And so don't make any assumptions. Remain vigilant and be prepared.
Police in Hong Kong used tear gas and water cannons today to battle protesters who set blazes and hurled firebombs. Authorities banned today's march, but tens of thousands of demonstrators gathered at government headquarters. The protesters armed themselves with makeshift weapons and shields as they confronted police who fired blue-tinted water from cannons to mark the protesters. This weekend marks the 13th week of unrest and falls on the 5-year anniversary of a decision by China to limit democracy in the semi-autonomous territory. That announcement launched a 79-day occupation of Hong Kong's streets by pro-democracy demonstrators known as the Umbrella Movement. In Moscow today, thousands marched to protest rules that bar some opposition candidates from running for city council. Marchers at the unauthorized rally held up pro-democracy signs and chanted, quote, "Russia will be free." Protests over the September 8th election began in mid-July, including a permitted rally that attracted about 60,000 demonstrators. The recent protests over the city council vote are the largest showing of dissent in Russia in more than 5 years. Thousands gathered throughout the United Kingdom today to protest new Prime Minister Boris Johnson's move to suspend Parliament. Several thousand protesters gathered near the Prime Minister's 10 Downing Street residence in central London. Other demonstrations were planned in 30 locations throughout England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. The protesters are trying to stop a no-deal Brexit before an October 31st deadline. They say Johnson's decision to suspend Parliament for several weeks will prevent debate over the UK's departure from the European Union. The shutdown of Parliament is currently being challenged in 3 separate court cases. Prime Minister Johnson, who helped lead the successful Brexit referendum campaign, says his government is actively pursuing a new deal with EU leaders. For the latest projections of Hurricane Dorian's path, visit pbs.org/newshour. The United Kingdom is counting down to Brexit, their exit from the European Union. With Parliament facing suspension, court cases in the works, and protests like today's likely to continue, National Public Radio correspondent Frank Langford joins us now via Skype from London for more on this developing story. The protests that we're seeing seem to be growing, and they seem to be not just limited to London anymore.
No, we saw them in Glasgow, in Oxford, Liverpool, other cities around the country. They weren't that big today, and I think as we get closer to the October 31st date, when there could be the country could crash out of the EU with no deal at all, I think you'll see them grow.
This isn't just the people who are, well, I guess, in the opposition party who are pushing back at what Boris Johnson did. Over the past couple of days, we've seen members, current members of the Conservative Party, as well as previous ones.
You do, and I think you have rebel members of the Tory party who also object to this. And then a lot of the objection is to the principle. We have a parliament that's sitting here. Boris Johnson is maybe going to give them as little as five days to come back and try to mount a way of stopping him from taking the country out with no deal. The majority of the parliament is against this. They're on record being against this. So the idea that Boris Johnson is trying to curtail their time and power really strikes, it's a much bigger issue than just Brexit. It really strikes, many people feel, the representative nature of the democracy in the country.
Now, similar to the United States, you've got people who support this. People, it's a very sort of divided or divisive issue. You went out to kind of what's called the Midlands, what we might think of as the red states, people who support leaving the
Absolutely.
European Union, right?
Yeah, it's really Brexit country. And I got to say, Hari, it's like having a parallel conversation, like in a different country. When I was up in a town called Boston, for which Boston, Massachusetts is named, what everybody was telling me, this has been going on for more than 3 years. We feel that these anti-Brexit members of parliament are trying to defy the results of the 2016 referendum. And they say they're the ones who are being anti-democratic, not us. So people are looking at this issue right now through completely different lenses in this country.
So their frustration out in the Midlands against their parliament, who's not getting anything done, sounds a lot like some of the frustration that members, citizens of the United States have with Congress not getting anything done.
Absolutely. And I think that you see there's been a paralysis on Capitol Hill, I mean, to some degree for quite some time. You're really seeing it in the last 3 years here in the United Kingdom. The other thing is people today who are going to London I talked to also make comparisons about how Boris Johnson is the prime minister, is violating the norms, in their opinion, of UK democracy. And of course, we've been hearing for the last 2.5 years in the United States about Donald Trump doing the same thing in the United States, really affecting and not following the norms as they've been followed for many, many decades in the States.
So if you have been a British citizen in favor of leaving the European Union, at this point, do you overlook the tactics in which Boris Johnson is using?
I think you're dead on. What I was hearing up in the Midlands just a couple of days ago is people who were looking past those norms and they were saying, this has gone on too long. I just want to see Johnson end this and move out and get the country out of the EU. What's really interesting, Hari, is to talk to business people who know that this is going to hurt their business, particularly up there. They rely on agricultural workers from Eastern Europe. They're already feeling the pain. But for them, they want out of the European Union, and they want someone to do it for it, and they think Johnson is going to be their guy.
Okay, well, while this all happens, what's actually happening on the sort of UK government to EU level? Boris Johnson says he's working behind the scenes to try to get this going. Is there any possibility that in 5 days of debate, they could come to some resolution, or even before that, a deal could be reached?
I think there's great skepticism about that. While Boris Johnson has been saying one thing, what we're hearing out of Brussels is there's nothing new on the table. And remember, what Brussels has been saying all along is we have to preserve an open border on the island of Ireland. That does not work for the United Kingdom. They feel that they're going to end up having Northern Ireland too closely aligned with the EU afterwards. It would be like they're not even leaving the EU. And that's just been sort of a Gordian knot for both sides. So the other thing is that what is the likelihood that Johnson can get this done in 6 weeks when it took 3 years and Theresa May failed, the former prime minister? So I think people are very skeptical that he's going to be able to come out quickly, be able to turn this all around and do something that his predecessor wasn't able to.
NPR correspondent Frank Langford joining us via Skype from London tonight. Thanks so much.
Happy to do it, Hari.
In our ongoing series, The Future of Food, supported in part by the Pulitzer Center, we explore the problem of excess food waste and one country's potential solution. Author and contributor Mark Bittman has more.
One third of the food produced in the world rots in the field, in transport, or is simply thrown away. This is obviously not only a massive waste of food, it's also a big contributor to global warming, because as it decomposes in landfills, it releases methane. One country is doing something about food waste. NewsHour Weekend special correspondent Christopher Livesay reports from Paris.
The French take food seriously. The country is famous for its bread, pastries, pâtés, and other delicacies. Lunch is so sacred here that you'll find many stores closed between about noon and 2, so workers can enjoy a long, relaxed midday meal. The French not only appreciate food, they're committed to not wasting it. In fact, it's the law. Since 2016, large grocery stores have been banned from throwing away unsold food that could be donated to charities. Now, they must have systems in place to donate that food. We're behind the scenes at one of the country's biggest grocery chains to see how France's landmark food waste law works. A truck is loaded up with tomatoes, berries, fruit, brioche, and yogurt. About $340 worth of food close to the expiration date. Food that in most countries would be thrown away.
They can't sell it anymore, but they say it's still good to eat for 5 or 6 more days.
The food is donated to non-governmental organizations, NGOs, and other charities who help feed the poor.
Fruits and vegetables, it's about 200 to 300 euros worth that we're giving away every day.
Eric Chabert, this supermarket's director, says the law has improved his store's food waste management.
It also has an impact because if we were to throw away food, we would also increase our workload with the trash bins, which would require additional scheduling of bin removal on site. So it's beneficial on several levels.
Another benefit of donating food, stores can take advantage of a pre-existing tax break on as much as 60% on the inventory value of the donated food.
It's interesting to both be able to help NGOs and get a small financial incentive to compensate for the fact that we're giving away food.
Guillaume Garreau is a member of France's parliament and the author of France's food waste bill. He says the bill has substantially increased food donations from large grocery stores.
Where did the idea come from for this law?
I had seen reports on French TV showing some big supermarkets were taking out trash bins with perfectly edible food in them, seeing that food was being destroyed while at the same time there are people dying of hunger. So how do you fight this? How do you fight against this scandalous way of producing to throw away? That was the beginning for me.
The French Federation of Food Banks agrees the law is working. It's a major middleman in the grocery store to charity food chain. Every morning, more than 2,700 supermarkets send nearly out-of-date food to nearly 80 warehouses around the country, rescuing 46,000 tons a year that would otherwise be thrown away. Donations to food banks are up more than 20%, according to the government. Here at the food bank, it's a mostly volunteer operation and a race against the clock to collect, sort, and then distribute food while it's still good to the thousands of local NGOs. Some will use the food to prepare meals, 226 million a year, according to the food bank. Others, like the Salvation Army, sort and distribute the donated food directly to the needy.
The people who need some food are really happy to have some fresh product.
In France, 1 out of 5 people say they have a hard time eating enough food every day, according to a recent poll. For Angela, the Salvation Army is a lifesaver. She asked us not to use her last name. She has 3 kids to feed at home, so she comes here once a week to get the fresh vegetables, meat, yogurts, and cheese she says she can't afford otherwise.
The children are young. They cannot be working. My husband and I are unemployed. It means a lot because before, when we didn't know about this place, we used to spend a lot to buy food in stores. This represents a lot because with this, we are able to live, you know?
The law has had ripple effects, raising consumer awareness and helping inspire new startups and apps like Too Good To Go. The app tells me about a Paris bakery where, close to closing time, I can get what they call a magic bag of their products for about $3.30, a sizable discount.
For 3 euros. 3 euros, I got. All right, let's start with the pain au chocolat. I've got some croissants in here. Got a loaf of bread, looks delicious, and got what looks like a really good ham sandwich.
The law is the first of its kind in the world, but for all its positive effects, it has been criticized for not ensuring that all stores are complying. It calls for stiff penalties, about $4,000, each time a store is caught throwing away donatable food. But so far, no one has been fined. Some of the critics include NGOs themselves, who say they sometimes get food they can't use.
I'm not sure I would be comfortable eating a yellow broccoli.
We saw for ourselves, broccoli sent by one grocery store was not fit to eat.
Aline Chassagnot is a social coordinator with the Salvation Army.
They must be green.
Okay. So what do you do with this?
Normally, it must go to the garbage.
On this day, we saw three trash bins of food thrown away. Presumably, the supermarket that donated that food received a tax benefit regardless. So the question is, how do you make sure that supermarkets and other participants aren't gaming the system?
It's very clear that products arriving at the NGO when the consumption date has expired, fresh products especially, must not be donated. There is no doubt a need to intensify checks, public checks, on the way large supermarkets are donating.
Another problem, says Manon Kier, coordinator of an NGO called Zero Waste, is that the law fails to address sources of food waste other than grocery stores.
For us, there's many more solutions and measures to be adopted to prevent this food waste.
According to France's National Environmental Agency, retail and distribution, including grocery stores, only accounts for 14% of food waste in France. Agriculture accounts for 32%, followed by food processing at 21% and consumers at 19%. Restaurants contribute 14%. None of these other sources are addressed in the law. As such, Kier says she doubts the French government can meet its goal when it comes to reducing food waste.
They have a pretty ambitious goal, which is to reduce by 50% food waste before 2025. They're still lacking a lot of important obligations for agriculture and food industry. We find it also important to promote more education for the consumers or in schools.
I do believe we need to widen the actors involved in fighting food waste.
It's a global problem, says Garot, and France aspires to be a model for the world.
Today, countries as different as Peru, Finland, and Malaysia, but also some countries in Africa, are closely looking at what we've been doing in France. So what's important is to act together in the same direction.
The U.S. and China are the largest emitters of greenhouse gases. If food waste were a country, it would be the third largest. To learn more about the impact of food waste on the environment and how big the problem is here in the United States, NewsHour Weekend's Megan Thompson recently sat down with Elizabeth Balkin, the food waste director at the Natural Resources Defense Council.
Paint the picture for me. How much food do we waste here in the United States?
In the U.S., up to 40% of the food that is produced every year goes wasted. That translates into economic loss of $218 billion per year. And at the individual level, a household of four spends on average $1,500 or more per year on food that never gets eaten.
What are the connections between the amount of food that we waste and environmental impacts, climate change?
The greenhouse gases associated with food waste amount to roughly 37 million passenger vehicles on the road. Not only do you have the contributions from methane when food waste rots in a landfill, but you have all these other resources that go into the production, the manufacturing, the transportation, the storage, distribution. All of those resources are swallowed up when we waste food rather than eat it. Of the top 100 most impactful things that we can do to address climate change, food waste prevention is number three. It's not solar power, it's not wind power, it's food waste prevention.
What are the biggest contributors to food waste here?
Overall, consumers and consumer-facing businesses, restaurants, cafeterias, are responsible for over 80% of the food waste in this country. For example, in restaurants, the vast majority of food waste comes from what is left over on people's plates or post-consumer waste. So if we want to really tackle the food waste that's happening in restaurants, for example, we need to start addressing the harder part of the puzzle, which is customer behavior.
So it sounds like culture plays a role in some of this.
Culture plays a huge role in, and is really part of the equation in the U.S. in a fundamental way. In this country, I think we have certain expectations about the way that food is presented. We like abundance, and food is very cheap in this country. So the cost to businesses of wasting food is not so outsized when compared to either the consumer expectation or the business's expectation of what the consumer expects to see when they walk into a hotel buffet or they walk into a supermarket aisle.
What are steps that individual consumers can take?
We don't want consumers to feel like they're the villains here. A lot of the source reason for food waste is connected to things like date labels. Date labels didn't really exist before the 1970s. And before then, people would use their senses. They would use the smell test on milk. They might try a little bit of yogurt. And if something tasted fine or smelled okay, didn't smell like it had gone off, they would eat it. What you see when you look at a date label that says best if used by has nothing to do with food safety, but it's a manufacturer's suggestion about when this food item is at its peak freshness, which is inherently a subjective thing. In fact, besides baby formula, there is really no regulation around date labels. So there's enormous opportunity to reform date labels to be consistent with public health information and science, and in doing so, prevent a ton of food from going to waste.
Elizabeth Bulkin, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is PBS NewsHour Weekend Saturday.
And now to viewers like you, your chance to comment on stories you've seen here on PBS NewsHour Weekend. This year, we kicked off our Future of Food series by exploring one company's efforts to produce genetically modified salmon as a way to meet the global demand for fish.
Fletcher patented his technology and started a company which eventually became Aqua Bounty. His invention is still the center of its work. A genetically engineered salmon that grows twice as fast as regular salmon while actually consuming less feed. The difference is significant. These fish are both about 2 years old.
It's really hard to believe that these salmon are the same age, and there's such a huge size difference between the two of them.
This fish is 5 kilos, ready for market. That fish is a long ways from market.
We received comments from across the country and across a wide range of perspectives. On our Facebook page, Michelle Renee wrote, "Our wild salmon populations are critical to viable ecosystems. They're being decimated by a triple threat of climate change, pollution, and overfishing. I love salmon and will happily eat a more sustainable solution. Don't be scared of science. After all, you have fish genes." Matt Hutchins said, "I only eat wild-caught salmon and grass-fed beef. Thanks." On Twitter, Laura Gelizunas commented, "Frankenfood, no thanks. Easier to just quit eating fish and seafood. No factory farm junk either." And on Instagram, Kathleen Hulkery wrote, "Our food production needs to increase 70% by 2050. Our waterways and soil are so polluted with toxins and overfished. Maybe this alternative makes sense for our survival. Something to consider." As always, we welcome your comments. Visit us at pbs.org/newshour, on our Facebook page, or tweet us at NewsHour. Finally tonight, there are reports that at least two people were killed and at least 20 injured in shootings in the West Texas towns of Midland and Odessa this afternoon. As of 6 p.m. Eastern time, the Midland Police Department posted on its Facebook page that the possible shooters were driving separately in a gold and white small Toyota truck and a possibly stolen U.S. Postal Service van. There is a report that one suspect was taken into custody near a movie theater in Midland. Police are asking residents to stay off the roads. We'll have more on this developing story on our website, pbs.org/newshour, and on our broadcast tomorrow. That's all for this edition of PBS NewsHour Weekend. I'm Hari Srinivasan. Thanks for watching. Have a good night.